Surprise! Welcome to MGRO Podcast 8.22, sponsored by the Alumni Association. So if you like podcasts, join the Alumni Association, because we might be forced to do more of these. Podcast 8.22. You probably didn't expect this podcast to exist, but we are here. We're here at the Young Center, hosted by the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan at its Greater Detroit Club's annual meeting and golf outing. That is the background noise. People are susurrating. How do you pronounce that? I've only seen it in text. Do you even know that that's a word? You don't.
No.
That's why I'm the boss.
Oh.
That's Ace. I'm Brian.
We're imbibing. We can go with that.
They're imbibing. Well, I was just, there's a background conversation going on.
Yeah. See, I didn't even know where that word was coming from.
Well,
so.
You got to read some more.
Apparently.
Before we kick it off, we would like to thank our sponsors. We are presented by Underground Printing and the Bow Store, Homeshare Lending, Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Deo Bookkeeping, Michigan Law Grad, and Peak Wealth Management. And Seth has put a special note. Don't forget, you have until Friday to get in on the Hail of the Victors Kickstarter, which comes with many, many things that are mostly magazines and the occasional shirt.
The shirt is very good. You should get the shirt.
Yeah, the shirt's very good every year, and thanks to Abraham for that. All right. We have actually had news events worthy of having a podcast, which is nice.
Seriously. June. Did not expect that.
I was like, what are we going to talk about? Well, there's been a couple of basketball changes and hockey changes, but we're going to start off with football because we know what pays the bills.
Mm-hmm.
Got a couple of news items as far as position switches go. Number one, Ben Mason moves to fullback.
Apparently born for it.
Born for fullback, and I think this is some. I mean, I've been saying this for months.
We all knew this was coming, but especially given the other linebackers in the class.
The other linebackers.
And the gaping hole at fullback.
Right, yeah. So. The only scholarship fullback next year will be Ben Mason.
Yes.
So it's kind of important to put somebody there. That is a spot at which walk-ons can definitely make an impact. Joe Carriage. Also Joe Carriage.
Yes.
Bobby Henderson could have been if there weren't two full scholarship fullbacks in front of him. But it's an important position, and Ben Mason is the kind of tough, kind of try-hard guy who's a perfect fit for it. He'll be 250 easy by fall. Probably still red shirts because You have that luxury.
Yeah, then they're set at the position this year. But third fullback is a pretty unnecessary luxury to have.
It is. It's kind of a weird winding road that got us here. Like, remember Chase Lassiter?
Yes.
Was there another fullback who decommitted, or is that just Ben Mason reclassifying to a linebacker temporarily?
I think there was another one that they put. Well, they poked around at the kid from LSU, Torrey Carter.
Right, yeah.
And it seemed like that was going to be a flip at one point, and then that never materialized.
So just all these names who might be fullbacks, and now we have a name going forward, Ben Mason.
He likes to hit things. It seems like a good fit.
He does. I mean, you watch his linebacker film, and it's like, let's put up a fullback. And now he's there, and I think that's a good fit for everybody. Two more interesting moves in the secondary that not only speak about these players, but I think speak about what Michigan thinks they've already got at wide receiver.
Yes.
So Drake Harris moves to cornerback, and Brad Hawkins moves to safety. Let's start with Drake. I was a little bit surprised at that.
Yeah, I mean, it's late in his career to be making a switch to the complete other side of the ball, especially since that wasn't really his focus in high school either.
Well, I mean, Harbaugh pointed out that he moved Richard Sherman at this juncture in his career, which he's probably going to, like, every time he has to move someone to defensive back, it's like,
That is a selling point, and it's a good one.
Like, everybody who's shorter than 6'5" gets compared to Jabril Peppers when the Michigan recruits.
Yes.
It's just going to be like, Sherman Peppers. I also thought it was interesting because, like, late last year, Harris was actually getting some playing time. And, you know, if things had broken a little bit differently, he could have been on the receiving end of three or four
rather big plays.
And then you're going into this year and you're kind of expecting him to maybe be a breakout player.
Yeah.
And instead he's going to try to figure out if he can play cornerback. I mean, we'll see how that works out. But to move a guy who was amongst your most experienced returning players. I mean, I think other than Grant Perry, he's got the most career catches.
Yeah.
Like, that says a lot about Donovan Peoples-Jones and Tariq Black.
It sure does. It also might say something about their confidence in the Grant Perry stuff clearing up, which they've already taken one big step towards that by reinstating him to the team.
Yeah, and so we've got a little bit of discussion about Michigan State, because how can you not?
Yeah.
When I brought up this kind of pattern on Twitter in a very long thread today.
Indeed.
And some people are, like, clapping back at me about Grant Perry. And I'm like, dude, he's been reinstated to the team, but what does that mean until August? It means nothing. It means absolutely nothing.
It means they can put his name on the roster that doesn't exist, because we haven't had anything since 2016 on that front.
Yeah, that's true. There's been no phone books.
No.
That's depressing. But he has a trial date July 17th, and you know, the way these things work, you know, the first offense, usually you talk with the prosecutor, you can get a diversion or you do a plea deal. And whatever that is probably going to be predetermined. So that court hearing is going to be short and sweet.
Yeah.
And then Michigan thinks that suspending Grant Perry for 3 games is a proper response to that. And we'll see how it works out. I'm guessing that that's going to be in the reasonable range. Unlike suspending some guys for no games for pretty terrible offenses.
Yes. No.
But that's another segment within our segment.
There's nuance to this, but yeah.
And then Brad Hawkins moves to safety, another move that I think a lot of people anticipated. The interesting thing about Brad Hawkins is that they were willing to take him as a post-grad player when it looked like they were going to get, like, 4 totally awesome dudes at wide receiver.
Yeah.
And that would push one of them out of the class. And, you know, that's a really interesting guy to have on your team, because if you're picking him over Oliver Martin or Nico Collins,
it's a heck of a receiver prospect.
Yeah, you think that guy can play. And then his tape comes out from his prep year, and it's just, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a bunch of circus catches for the most part.
Yeah, he did the Darbo versus BYU. He literally made that catch.
Yeah.
And all right, I'm like, all right, let's do this. And now he's at safety, which makes a ton of sense from a roster perspective.
Yes.
But, you know, given the things that Brad Hawkins appears to be really, really good at, it kind of limits his ability to use that skill.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to get the occasional jump ball that you can get to make a play on as a safety, but for the most part,
right, that doesn't really happen.
Yeah, and I guess we haven't really seen, as I know he played some defensive back in high school, but that's not what's featured for the most part on his highlight films or anything. So we don't have much to go on to know.
Nothing.
On the safety side of things, like what's his strength there? What does he bring to the table? We're not sure.
I mean, he did play a significant amount. Like, he had racked up, like, 100 tackles his last couple of years. So this isn't, like, a dilettante. This is a guy who pretty much started both ways.
Yes.
And there's a little bit of film on him on his, like, junior tape. He didn't have a senior tape. And he looks okay, but it's just no evidence whatsoever. So I actually wouldn't be entirely surprised if he gets moved back to the offensive side of the ball at some point, just because
it's easier to go in that direction than it is to switch from offense to defense, I would assume.
Yeah, and just given the catches he makes, like, he might be, well, you know, in any other class, he would probably be the guy who's like, ooh, the red zone guy, but not in this class.
But Nico Collins in this class, Donovan Peoples-Jones in this class, and Tariq Black in this class.
Right, so
it's an absurd wide receiver class.
It is. So, I mean, that'll be interesting. Obviously, having a third safety in the previous recruiting class is something that balances out the roster going forward. So now you've got 5 guys back there before you have to start pinging walk-ons. And Glasgow, who's not really a walk-on, he's a Glasgow. So these all make sense to me, except kind of the Drake Harris one, and we'll see how that works out. But interesting development. Another interesting development, Michigan is in on Sonny Odogwu. I think that's how you pronounce it.
I'll give it a pass.
All right. He is a right tackle from Miami, 6'8", 320 pounds, and has actually started 14 games for them over the past couple of years.
Yes.
Got injured 4 games in the last season, which is bad for him, but good for teams that really need a tackle. The only problem with him is he was not able to participate in spring practice, at Miami, so they were just getting him back on the field. He'll be in a race to fitness, but you know, Michigan's got the open scholarship.
I mean, it just seems like there's no downside to taking him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Unless you're the number 86 guy who's a walk-on who's like, oh, come on. But I'm not that guy, so let's go get him.
And it's really more that guy's parents that are going to be peeved. So
that's true. That's very true. But this is a guy who, if you look at his film, not the most mobile guy in the world, but an engulfer. Doesn't hammer people off the line of scrimmage, but just by virtue of his frame and his ability to move around, a guy who I think would be a strong candidate to start at right tackle.
Yeah, I mean, especially since when we're looking at the candidates right now, they are either true freshmen or assuming Juwan Bushel-Beattie is kind of out of it, given what we've seen from him.
Yeah.
John Runyon, who is not tackle-shaped.
No.
And Sonny Udagwu is very tackle-shaped, and one thing that length allows him to do is just kind of fend guys off, even if he doesn't have great pass pro technique. I was poking around Pro Football Focus once his name surfaced and checked in on their grades versus Florida State, and Udagwu graded out pretty well, and it was a game in which Florida State's pass rushers, and we're quite familiar with the fact that they have some very good pass rushers, were held pretty quiet.
Yeah, for a guy who is kind of a backup type option or a late option, having a guy who played better against Florida State than anybody on Michigan's offensive line is a pretty good one to pick up.
Yes, that would be nice to have. Worst case scenario is you have some depth at tackle, and they sorely need that.
Yeah, UCLA is the competition, which is extremely irritating, because why would you go to UCLA? I mean, for weather, I guess.
You know, the weather is pretty nice.
Jim Mora, I'm going to take that five-star recruit and turn it into a, 5-7 season? They were like 4-8 last year. They were like Michigan State bad last year.
Yeah, they were. At the very least, Notre Dame bad.
There were some nice aspects to last year.
There certainly were.
Moving on, the new recruiting rules the NCAA passed have kind of – it's been nice because instead of the SEC complaining about things that are within the rules that Jim Harbaugh is doing, they're complaining about the new rules that allow people to do things.
Yes.
Like, these aren't restrictions. They're the opposite of restrictions. So, with one exception that we'll get to in a little bit. So,
and believe it or not, it's the worst rule.
It is the worst rule. So there's an early signing period in December. I've generally been opposed to early signing periods because you get a lot of firings in December. You get a lot of changes. It doesn't make sense to accelerate the process. But late December is good, I think, from the perspective of the recruits. And to if you're an honest dealer in recruiting, I think it's good for you as well.
Yes.
So at that point, almost all of the coaching vacancies will be filled. You don't have to sign. So, like, if you're committed to a team without a coach, it's your option to hold off. But what it does is it clarifies from both ends, like, who's committed and who has a reservation, as I think someone put it. And then from the recruit's end, like, do I have a letter of intent or not?
Yes.
And this is actually, you know, a case where, like, I'm like, don't ever sign a letter of intent. Now I think you got a case.
At least for those early guys, absolutely, yeah. Where you can get into that the Eric Swenson situation,
yes.
Get that resolved.
So you've got about 40 days between this signing period and actual signing day. Long enough to go on some official visits, long enough to, like, repilot your recruitment if you don't get a letter of intent. So the Swenson thing can't happen anymore, right?
Yeah, I mean, it'd have to happen in a very contracted period of time.
Like, because the Swenson thing happened in January. Like, they waited that long. I mean, kind of mutually waited that long. But
yes.
He would know that he didn't have a letter of intent to Michigan, and he would be able to take a couple more official visits and see what was out there. So that's a good change. Also a good change, early official visits. Honestly, I don't know why official visits are restricted at all.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make much sense, I guess, but it's definitely of a benefit, especially, and this is probably why the SEC is not happy.
This is the thing that they're most upset about.
Well, because it definitely benefits the northern schools that they're able to get kids on campus earlier, both being able to pay for out-of-region kids to get up there and also getting kids on campus during a time when the weather is a little bit more conducive to people enjoying it.
Yeah, well, and also you might go back down to Georgia and it's like 95 degrees and you're like, you know, this is less good than I thought it might have been.
So, and especially with, I mean, you kind of have to do that once you introduce an early signing period.
I think they could have left it alone. Like, it's not moved up enough that I think it really has an impact on 90% of guys' recruitments. But what it does is it allows guys who are going to get their decisions out of the way in the summer to save a bunch of money.
And yeah. That's,
I think that's good. Like, any expense you can move from the players to the schools is a good one.
Yeah, and especially with the pace of recruiting picking up the way it has. I mean, you look at the list of top quarterbacks in the 2018 class. Almost
all
of them are committed. Those dominoes fall quickly.
Show's the only one. That's not any Brown said.
Shuck.
It's Shuck.
Yeah. I finally watched a video interview. It's apparently Shuck.
That's not my fault.
No, there's a hard C or K sound in there that just isn't in his name.
No, that's...
So...
That's not
but apparently that is pronounced Shuck.
Apparently it must be.
Yeah.
Because that's what he says.
Because there's no way you'd come up with that from looking at his name on a piece of paper.
And then the third major change is the one that we've been kind of complaining about for a while. It's the individual...
It's so dumb.
...associated with a prospect. If you hire a guy in a non-coaching role, you can't have... a recruit come in the next 2 years, and you can't have had a recruit come in the past 2 years, which means that basically everyone who ever works for IMG is prohibited
from getting an analyst position.
Right.
Yeah, the coaches should hate this most of all because it's just limiting their mobility.
Like,
it's crazy for a guy who's trying to... Like, one of the big ways that you climb the ladder as a coach is to go somewhere with a bunch of elite prospects, get those guys recruited, and get yourself noticed that way.
Yeah, and
that's how you climb the ladder.
Can you imagine if this rule was in place when Chris Partridge was at Paramus?
Oh, man. That would not have gone over so well around these parts.
No, it's just... And you look at Partridge, who's moved up to the linebacker coaching job, did a great job with linebackers last year, is one of the best recruiters in the country, and there's nothing untoward about his career path. Like, and the thing that really gets me is that this came up, and it's not like recruiting is clean in any way whatsoever, right?
No.
Like, are we really concerned about, like, the path for high school coaches to become college coaches when the SEC is just flagrantly ignoring rules left and right? I mean, I don't have a necessarily moral problem with it, but, like, it just sucks because they're like, okay, we're gonna just flout all of these rules, but if you seem a little bit suspicious, we're going to jump down your throat. Like, Pete Feinbaum, he's like trying to make it seem like Harbaugh's this dirty dude when he's recruiting this 2019 quarterback, and he's offering this other guy an analyst position. I'm like, dude, how many SEC schools are on probation right now? 75, and there's only 14 of them. So,
and you know, leaving aside that the guy Michigan was looking at was like eminently qualified for the position,
right?
Too.
He had been an NFL coach for a decade. Like, this isn't like Mizzou hiring Michael Porter's dad.
No.
Which Pete didn't have any comment on that.
No, he did not.
Which is,
and if you're Mizzou, great job.
well
played.
You know.
Because he's got a younger brother, too.
Well, yeah, but it depends, like, right? Like, this could be a Lorenzo-type situation, Lorenzo Romar.
Yeah.
Like, Quanzo has recruited well, but his teams haven't really done much.
Yeah, but how else is Mizzou going to get good at basketball?
Well, I mean, they get...
Just bring in the number one player and hope he carries you.
They got Evan Robb and they got Jaylen Brown in the same class, and their results from that were basically...
Yeah, Cal did not capitalize on some big-time guys.
So you got a question, like, how much is that going to pay off in actual terms of wins and stuff? Like,
yeah,
B-Land's got a model, and Mizzou's got a model.
Anyway, another reason why this rule is just stupid.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are willing to give a high school coach a full position shot right away, then you can still do it. But, like, Michigan couldn't go back into Flanagan and go get a kid for another couple years.
Yeah.
But so you got to make that choice between having Devin Bush Sr. on your staff and recruiting a particular high school. And it's ironic that the first school that got caught up by this is actually Auburn. Because they hired a local high school coach as an analyst, and now they can't recruit that place for the next couple of years. And I'm just like, well,
it's funny how those things work out.
So I think this is a progress. I think the new recruiting model is good.
And and
with some exceptions, this is actually good pro player legislation.
And especially, the official visit stuff is the most pro player thing they've done recruiting wise in a while, and that's a step in the right direction, to say the least.
And it has caused some absolutely hilarious responses from Nancy. Brett Bielema is like, I don't think we should have spring official visits because of academics. And I'm just like, you got to be kidding me.
What, you don't think Brett Bielema's ever hosted a player on an unofficial visit in the spring?
I think he might have done that. All right, we got to do this.
We must.
So Michigan State is reeling. Can we say reeling?
Yeah, it's in rough shape right now.
So today, as we are taping this, the investigations are finally out, and three very prominent players have been dismissed from Michigan State. And this is not something to take pleasure in, because this is a very serious situation. But
this is just surveying.
We're just trying to talk about some major changes with Arrival and how that affects their outlook long term and Michigan's outlook as they play them. So Donnie Corley, Josh King, and
Dimitric Vance
were dismissed today. Austin Robertson was dismissed earlier this year. Kenny Like and Khalil Gaines have just transferred to JUCOs. John Reschke was removed from the team for using the N-bomb, which, dude.
Not a good move.
Got a job with Bill Maher, I guess. Drake Martinez transferred, and Theo Lukizu, transferred, said he was giving up football, and now he's at a JUCO, so maybe he just wanted to get to East Lansing. And we've heard some things, some unconfirmed rumors that this is not the end, that there might be a couple more guys, including a starter, who aren't going to make it to fall camp. That's somewhere between 9 and 11 guys. And compounding that is their finish in recruiting last year was the worst I've seen a Big Ten team have.
Yeah, they were recruiting against, South Alabama.
And losing some of those
guys. Yeah, not always winning.
So, the last 7-8 guys in that class are just randos, basically.
Yeah, it was all a bunch of guys who were in, when the 247 composite goes beyond what it can handle and starts ranking guys in the thousands.
Yeah, these guys... These guys are not ranked and don't have offers like Power 5 recruits at all. And I think they're going to go into next season with about 75 scholarships. They're coming off 3-9. You've had just a ton of deserved bad press, finally, for Mike D'Antonio. And I think they're going to struggle to recruit. I think they're going to struggle to retain the good guys that they actually have in this class. And I don't see a whole lot of upside from 3-9 here, because you've lost a lot of guys lost top three guys from that 2016 class that was the best in their history. You've lost another three guys from that class. You just don't have the depth of freshmen to come in and contribute immediately.
No.
I think they're in tough. I think that we might be seeing the beginning of the end, or really the middle of the end.
Yeah, I think we're in the middle now. I mean, especially last year's collapse was so confounding because that was a senior-laden team.
Yes.
And so the question before all of this off-field stuff happened was, how do you turn that around when you're also replacing the number of starters that they're replacing?
Yeah, and Michigan has the lowest number of returning starters in the league this year. Number two is Michigan State. And, one of these teams is replacing players who were the best defense in the country. Well, one of them is not.
Yes.
And you've got
and one of them is replacing them with 4 stars and 5 stars, and the other one is not doing that right now.
So Michigan State's done a really good job over the past decade now of keeping their classes very small, redshirting a bunch of guys, not having a lot of attrition, and sometimes that lack of attrition was absurd. Glenn Winston.
Yes.
They went out of their way not to kick guys off the team, and now it's just chaos. And you know who that's traceable back to?
I mean,
you know who it is?
I mean,
do you know who it is? Come on, you know who it is. It's Malik McDowell.
Yeah.
He's a great player, but just look at how he played last year and how that kind of bled over into the rest of the team.
Yeah, it was obvious also that they just had a real fractured locker room.
Yeah,
we've heard a lot of, I mean, the Reschke thing.
The Reschke thing is like, what are you doing?
That's real bad.
That's so bad.
That is such a bad sign for your just team chemistry, atmosphere in that program, whatever. And now they've got to figure, and you already had programs starting to catch up to how they play defense.
Yeah.
You know, that just base cover four has, and not just at Michigan State, become less effective over the past couple of years if teams have figured out how to exploit that. So they already had to figure out how to turn that around. They haven't been able to find a quarterback post Connor Cook.
I mean, Lewerke was decent for what he was, but not a guy who I think is a slam dunk to be even in a top half Big Ten quarterback.
I mean, the guy who they were going to look to for playmaking in the passing game this year was going to be Donnie Corley.
Yeah.
I mean, L.J. Scott better be ready to carry the ball like 35 times a game. I know they got Gerald Holmes there too.
Well, you know, Scott was one of those guys who was out of the spring game. He's got some issues. I think we can say that. I mean, look at his playing time. Like,
yeah.
He's killing it against Michigan, and then, like, the previous week he barely plays. It's like...
There's something going on.
Yeah, there's just... It doesn't seem like L.J. Scott is completely in the right with his coaches. Otherwise, his playing pattern would be like, oh, you get every carry, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to sit down to write the Hail to the Victors Michigan State preview this week. And
I'm going to finally do it.
Yeah, I mean, I've waited it out long enough where I can actually use names. But I still don't know, like... if I write a name down, is that person going to be there in September?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like we're done necessarily with the fallout.
No,
here.
I don't think so.
And it's really hard to see a path for them.
Yeah, I mean,
the Big Ten East is split into two tiers right now, and they're in the tier with Maryland and Rutgers.
Well, you know,
in terms of how their outlook is,
Maryland's recruiting better. You know, Penn State has rebounded, and I don't think that they're quite as good as they showed last year going forward. But
I think they're going to be pretty darn good.
They're obviously on a different level from that Michigan State now, which you couldn't say last year.
Michigan State lost to Maryland last year.
They lost a lot of people.
They did.
I mean, the only thing that they've got going for them, and Indiana took itself apart for seemingly no reason.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Oof.
And, of course, Notre Dame is terrible. But we like that part,
and
too.
And the only team they beat after Notre Dame was Rutgers.
That was the most disappointing game of the season. It was like, what? It was like 49-0.
Yes.
It just shows you
how freaking terrible Rutgers is.
I know.
My God.
I didn't need them to win that game, but I was like, can we please have a game in the fourth quarter? Just like, it was not to be. But this, I mean, all of my worst predictions in like the history of MGO Blog have been negative predictions about Michigan State. And to be fair, they were backed up by 30 years of history.
sure were.
But this really feels like the end of the road, because how much of D'Antonio's goodwill did he burn going 3-9? How much of it did he burn this offseason? And how realistic is it that not even next year, but like 2 years from now, are they going to be a team that's any better than 7-5? That seems like a tall order.
Tough given the recruiting.
Yeah.
I mean, the 16 class is half gone.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly from the top half of that class.
Yes. Like, they've lost their top three guys. They've lost another couple of, like, 3-4-star borderline guys.
And the 17 class we've talked, I mean, it's half filled with complete flyers.
Yep.
It's and D'Antonio's not young.
That's another good point. He's definitely a guy who's very passionate, but he's had some heart issues. And, like, if he gets housed by Harbaugh this year, like, he might just try to preserve what he's got and call it a day.
Yeah, I mean, he had a heck of a run.
All right, I have a question for you. If you're Pat Narduzzi and Michigan State goes, like, 4-8 next year and they make a change, do you take that job?
No.
That's kind of my opinion, too.
I just, you're looking up at Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State in your own division.
Every year.
And
the ACC Coastal looks pretty good.
Yeah, the ACC's got a bit of an easier path. He's got the Western Pennsylvania recruiting ground. And, like...
Going to have more...
And traditionally, if you go back, Pitt's a better program.
Well,
I mean, they're at least, like, on relatively equal footing.
It's been a long time.
That's taking the wide lens historical look, to be sure. But It's just tough to see a lot of upside in taking that job. I don't think a very established coach, at least one as established as Narduzzi, if they're having any sort of success, is going to want to step into that job.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have to be like a true believer. He might be a true believer.
It's possible. It took him forever to leave, that's for sure. Yeah.
Well, he's waiting for a good shot, and he got it. So, I don't know. We'll see, but I'm looking forward to that game next year.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about something else.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Ace, I wish to speak to you now of Andrew. Each day, Andrew Deogracias used to go to his corporate consulting job, where each day he felt the darkness. Now he serves small and mid-sized consulting firms and nonprofits across the country, providing bookkeeping and accounting services. He finds others, usually fellow Wolverines, who left the darkness but need a little help.
Andrew Deogracias is a seasoned Big Four strategy consultant. He should work for the Blackness.
But Ace, he'd rather work for guys like us. He'll keep us from missing deadlines and personally handle onerous tasks like editing and formatting our forms and finalizing documents, research, or analysis. If we did consulting work, he could help us with those deliverables, which you don't usually get from a bookkeeper.
But Brian, we do our work in silence.
No, he's an independent freelancer, so he'll do the work himself. And Andrew's offering a deal to Michigan alumni, one free month. Just mention the promotion code Each Day We Work when contacting him. Find us at deobookkeeping.com and schedule a free consultation today. That's deobookkeeping.com. In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup?
We would like to welcome in Bruce Mate right now. Bruce is a senior advisor with the athletic department.
That sounds important.
And he's like Michigan Man Classic. Like,
yeah, that'd be a good way of putting it, yeah.
Well, I think it's a great thing that you're back with the athletic department.
I appreciate it. It's fun.
A lot of institutional memory. Oh, that's insulting.
Well, if you can't spell institutional, it is. But otherwise, I think it's a compliment.
We bring him for the gimmicky top five, which is the top five things that we are proud of that are dumb.
Yes.
And he, like, I was like, do you have a list? And we have a list. And it took me like 15 minutes to do this. And he's like, all the things I do are dumb. So he just wrapped them. So this will be fascinating.
Yes.
Answer number five.
So in college, my co-ed, or not my co-ed, my regular flag football team, a couple of guys on it were former walk-ons who knew Marquis Slocum. So Slocum shows up to our flag football game. This was before he was dismissed from the team.
Clearly.
And first of all, he tried to play, which did not go over well with the refs. they recognized that he might be a member of the football team.
Yeah.
And he was screaming at, he was heckling everybody on the field, including our team, his friends, the opponents, and the officials, screaming, "You're under the lights anytime anybody screwed up," because we were playing indict. And I happened to be playing safety while he was on the sideline and got like a long pick six.
Yeah.
And had Marquise yelling, "You're under the lights," in like a positive way. And that was a very fond but kind of silly and stupid memory.
All right. Bruce, number five.
My number five. I think that my number five was back in my senior year of high school at University of Detroit High School.
Wow, that's going back.
I can go back a few years. You know, I'm a lot longer than you guys. But what happened was Ned Harkness was going to be named the Detroit Red Wing hockey coach, and Jim Bishop was going to be the general manager of the Red Wings. This was darkness under Harkness. But Jim Bishop was one of the great box lacrosse coaches up in Canada. So he decided that he was going to develop a box lacrosse league. So what I did was I talked to my buddies and I says, "Well, let's go out for the team." So we ended up
is box lacrosse?
Basically, it's hockey. It's lacrosse in a hockey rink.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And so it makes hockey look like a child's play. Okay?
Sure.
Because
yeah.
The sticks are already above your head. And so I go out. I get these guys to go out and. We were supposed to go to our graduation, just the day before the graduation and go for a dinner and all that type of stuff. And basically, I had talked to all my friends who were going to go on as we were going out. We had a big game that day. We went out. We missed the graduation ceremony prior to the graduation. Almost didn't even allow to be in our graduation. And anyways, we ended up playing, on this team. We ended up winning the division and going to Mississauga to play in a championship which, of course, was in an Indian reservation.
And, of course.
And of course, they over there knew how to play the game.
Yes, they do.
And as soon as the first opening draw took place, this is back when you had the sticks that looked like a Crozier staff with catgut on the side.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first time on the draw, one of the guys on the other team, on the team from the Indian reservation, took that thing, went right across my leg, and I had four stitches right off the bat like that. We went back. We got our butts beat 22-1.
22-1.
Yeah, we were just absolutely killed, but we had an absolute blast. But I talked all my buddies into doing this, and what happened is two of my buddies ended up playing for the Windsor Warlocks and ended up playing for the Memorial Cup. So this really was kind of an interesting.
The Windsor Warlocks.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. So, that's number five.
I don't even want to talk.
Good luck.
Yeah, like
I'm signing out of this conversation.
Yeah. So my number five is taco pants.
This is going to be a great topic.
Like I mean, it's just this dumb term where it's like here's this 11-foot imaginary wide receiver,
and now
who Chad Henne is like throwing all the balls to instead of Jason Avant. Not all the balls, sorry, chanceless.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, and people kind of picked up on it and ran
part
with
of the
it.
Lexicon.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like I haven't done that as much as I thought I would. Like people don't imbibe my terminology and just kind of use it as much, but taco pants is something people know.
Well, that is a neat one. I like that.
Thank you.
That's very nice.
Thank you.
Very
finally
nice.
Someone appreciates
taco pants.
Taco pants.
Yeah,
instead
a,
of like
today is Taco Tuesday, so
Ace number four.
I keep getting reminded of this because people say someone said something really dumb and then I can't see it and it's because I'm blocked by Dennis Dodd on Twitter.
He blocked you?
Yeah. Wait, did you say
I don't
something?
I don't even remember what I did, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I'm blocked
you
by
must
Dennis
have done something.
Dodd. I'm sure I did something. I can be a little.
Yeah, we were talking about this a little bit earlier. Like some people block you and you haven't been interacting with them and then you know you're like really under their skin.
Yeah. Like, so I don't know what I did, but I keep seeing these like, tweet not available below somebody quote tweeting.
And it's Dennis Dodd?
And it's Dennis Dodd.
What's he Dennis Dodd?
I mean, usually people, when he said something that, like what got posted on Verify Veracity this week.
If you don't know what he's talking about, Dennis Dodd got really angry that people were joking that Jim McElwain was the naked shark guy.
Which is not. He took that very seriously.
And everybody
possibly more seriously than Jim McElwain.
No, McElwain took it just as seriously.
He did also take it pretty seriously.
He was very upset that people on the internet were like, hey, he kind of looks like this guy.
He seemed to have a fundamental misunderstanding of the internet.
Well,
how it works,
you know.
Well, you're talking about Jim McElwain.
Yeah. It's true. Bruce, you're number four. Okay.
My number four. We're going to go back again. This time we're going to go back. We're going to go back to my eighth grade.
What's growing farther back in the past?
Well, yeah. You wait till I get back to when I was born.
I don't.
So in eighth grade, okay. I had two buddies that were mad at each other, and they decided they were going to have a fight. And I decided that, no, we're not going to have a fight. Let's promote the fight. So we promoted
God,
the fight.
God, you were just born to do.
So we literally promoted the fight, okay, and what we did was, it was classic. It was almost like the Don King type of thing because we literally started to charge. We sold tickets to it.
Yeah.
We sold tickets to it. We sold it out, and I was one of the trainers of one of the fighters, too, and I was taking 50% of the profit. So this was just like Don King. So anyways, we had this fight, and it turned out to be a little bit bigger than, so one of the parents had to come out and literally, they ended up having to ref the fight because they were afraid to say because something was going to happen.
No, I don't believe you anymore.
Yeah, okay. So they did, and this thing got going. Well,
you have eighth graders.
Yes.
And
yeah,
there's a prize fight.
Yes.
And one of the parents is refereeing.
Yeah, they had to because what happened was they thought something was really going to go crazy because we were going to have.
Did you grow up in ancient Sparta?
No, I was not. No, I was never a Spartan. But it gets better.
It does it.
Yes, it gets a lot better because what we also did, the trainer on the other, my other buddy who was the other trainer who was taking the money, we were taking bets. Okay, so we took bets on this thing. So in the second round, all of a sudden, my buddy's father has to call the fight off because they're just starting to get at each other. So he calls the fight and calls it a draw. Okay, he calls it a draw. So now all the people who made the bets come back to my buddy, and they want the money back. Well, when he was giving the money out, he must have screwed up because he didn't have enough money to give back to all the people. So the guy who's father was a reffin, had to literally bail us out with money to cover.
So you lost money on this?
No, we made money.
Okay,
don't worry about it. I said it was Don Kingish.
Well, all right. Okay. So your other friend just lost the money and was like, oh, Dad, can you help us out here?
It wasn't a lot of money. It was like $3 or $4. But in eighth grade, you know, back then, you know,
that's a lot of
that
money.
That was, you know, just prior to the Great Depression.
All right, so I hate this. I hate going after them.
I'm so glad we sat in this order. Right,
this is a god. So my number four is a Quiz Bowl tournament.
Okay.
It's at Michigan. I'm in high school, and unusually Michigan has a timer for all these things. So usually it's just like a number of questions. But Michigan has a timer, and there's like a first half and a second half, and I think they're 20 minutes. And we run out in a huge lead on these dudes, and we're just crushing them. And then in the second half, we just fall apart. We're just dying. And they manage to pull ahead in the dying seconds. And where I'm like, no, we can't lose this game. And so there's like 4 or 5 seconds left. And the way this works is if you buzz in before the time expires, you get to say your answer after the time expires. And the guy just says, the Personal Responsibility Act. And I buzz in and I'm like, and I say, the contract with America. And it was correct. And we had to get like Larry Bird played for Indiana State, but we won that game. And that is my best sports anecdote. And it's a Quiz Bowl story. That is like the, and like he's like making prize fights in eighth grade.
In eighth grade.
We're never asking you to do one of these again. Well, not like maybe we'll do a different topic. Ace, you're number three.
Gambling as a grade school student. Yeah, okay. That'll be the next topic. Okay.
I hate all of my answers now, even
so,
more.
So do I.
Yeah, Ace, you're number three.
Back in my Wolverine blog days.
Oh, yeah.
I put together a post-spring game video of Tate Forcier and then put out a second edition of that video where I cut up the highlights with the Christopher Walken Fat Boy Slim Weapon of Choice video.
Specifically at my request.
Yes, which got front paged on MGO blog. And, you know, when you're coming up through the Michigan blogosphere, that's like the Holy Grail is getting linked on MGO.
A different, simpler time.
Yeah, that was that might have been that was one of like the first handful of times that any of my stuff had appeared on the site.
Really? I thought
there's some Ace of Sports stuff had made its way on there, but that was definitely the first time I remember having something that drove a lot of traffic.
I don't even want to say this. Bruce, you're number three.
Okay. my number three. You see, now I'm starting to think maybe I should change one of them.
No, okay, just.
All right, so I'll go through this real quickly. So basically, this goes to roller derby. Okay.
Okay, yeah, that's cool.
Okay, roller derby. My wife, Suzette, plays Upset 53, and she is on the Derby Dimes group that's out of there, plays for the Ypsilanti Vigilantes. She's 59 years old, one of the older players on the team. The reason this becomes a thing is because the reason she got involved in it is because I coached the hockey team and I didn't like the way she skated. So I figured that she could go out in roller derby with the quads and, you know, really learn how to push out. She ended up loving the sport more than hockey, and she's played it now for 7 years. How about that?
I actually went to one of these games, and they're quite something.
They beat the crap out of each other.
They do.
You know, it's one of the few women's sports that allows you to hit, because even in hockey, you cannot hit. You can't check.
Yeah, someone got ejected, and I was like, "That I wish that wasn't an ejection, because that was awesome."
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen people just get driven across the line. It's neat. Okay.
So it gets worse for me. My number three is that time we did the cheese top five.
Oh, God.
and the specific part that I'm like totally the most proud of is my number five was American cheese. And Ace didn't take this seriously at all.
No.
And his number one was American cheese, specifically to piss me off.
Yes.
And I preempted him with my number five, and I was like, yes!
I now have two, like, things that I'm disappointed about from that top five. One is that.
Yeah.
And the other is there's, like, a huge viral tweet going around now about how Chuck E. Cheese's real name is Charles Entertainment Cheese, which was my number five for that list. And apparently if I just tweeted it, I'd have, like, 40,000 retweets right now.
I saw that tweet, and I'm like, why have I heard that before? That's why.
It was my fault. It's a very dumb thing that I should have been more proud of, apparently.
Yeah, but I totally owned you.
Yeah.
You got owned.
That happened.
Bruce, number two.
Okay, my number two. Okay. This one's going to go back to the college days, but we played stair hockey.
Stair hockey,
yes. And it was one of the brilliant things that we started out with is basically what we did was we went and our stairs went up, and then, of course, there was a landing and up there. And so when you were in a certain condition in the evening, you know, when you were in college, we would take a tennis ball and we would bounce the ball up. And what you had to do is you had to stop it. We didn't have a lot of lights up there, so you had to just like play goalie in it.
Okay? That sounds safe.
And you bouncing through, and the ball was. It was a great sport. We literally played that for 2 years in college. That tells you a little bit. That was well before Legends of League of Legends and all those type of things and Madden. Whatever.
That was implied.
But it was absolutely unbelievable. That ball would just bounce off, and you would throw that thing up. It would bounce around. It was a lot of fun. It really was. But you had to be in a certain condition.
So you had to invent a sport.
Yes. We invented a sport. No gambling on that one, though.
No.
Oh, okay. There's that.
Can't have everything.
Okay.
My number two is that I was an early adopter of, like, the look at this Graham Couch thing. Like, what is that? Like, he comes to prominence because he's like, Alex Carter is the best quarterback in the state at the time where, like, Kirk Cousins and Denard Robinson were the other two.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like.
It was a bold claim.
And, like, I think I've pushed forward the Graham Couch thing to the thing, like, he's going to be in the Detroit sports reg. Like, he made it last year. He might be a one seed this year. Like,
yeah, he's really made a push there.
And if he actually manages to win this thing, I'm going to be like, I really helped this.
That's moving up to number one on this
maybe,
list.
Maybe, possibly. So I just feel like bringing this to a wider consciousness has been very good for everybody.
Yeah, thanks for exposing us all to Graham Couch. Really appreciate it.
You're hired by the Lansing State Journal. It's like,
So you were the one?
I didn't hire him.
Oh.
Ace, you're number one.
Wait, I'm on number two, I thought.
Ace, you're number what? No, I just did cheese, and then I did. Have we not done your number two?
No, we haven't done that.
A Street number two.
I'm actually changing mine because the one I have down is stupid.
It's supposed to be stupid.
No, this one's also stupid.
Okay,
but,
well, better
work.
Be.
One of our things in college is we had a couple friends who went to Michigan State, and we would go occasionally visit them. And every year these visits would inevitably have some sort of disaster happen during them. Either somebody would drop an iPod into the snowbank or get arrested. Never me. But or, you know, there'd be a near fight. Or
sure,
it's
yeah.
like, you know, this is what happens when you spend a weekend in East Lansing.
Yes.
So the other thing about East Lansing is that everything is crazy spread out.
Yes.
So we'd start out at the friend was an RA, so we would just all crash in his larger-than-usual dorm room and then cap out to whatever party we wanted to go to, which were inevitably at apartments that were, like, 20 minutes away from yes. where we were staying. So we get to one, and it turns out that they're actually hosting a beer pong tournament, so me and Ooh. My buddy sign up. And we're progressing through the beer pong tournament, but our friend needs to get home. So we're in the finals. We're in the finals. The cab is outside. There's one cup left. And my buddy goes, okay, let's just end this. And, you know, if you hit the last
hit
shot.
Hit twice, then yeah.
So response. We know redemptioned it and just immediately left and got in the cab and left the party with a bunch of angry Spartans behind us. And we were far too proud of that for, like, how stupid
be.
Of an accomplishment it was. But
Did you high five and then freeze frame immediately afterward? Or
we did have, like, our own little handshake that we did.
Oh my God.
No, it was stupid. I mean, but no, we did not hold back from the celebration
because we'd
had to be at a party with a bunch of Michigan State students all night, so you might as well make the most of it.
You should have played stair hockey.
I'll start getting that one down.
All right, so we've got your number one left and your number one left.
Okay.
All right, so let's go back to Bruce. Bruce, your number one.
My number one. We're going to go to Michigan football on this one.
Okay, that's good.
This is a good one. It's the Virginia-Michigan football game.
I was at that
kickoff classic, right? And as you well know, with a great ending of the game, Michigan made the comeback, and Mercury Hayes made that great catch.
Yes.
So what that was a group that was putting this on, this outside group, had a deal. What you were supposed to do is give a basically, you know, ballots out for the most valuable player, right, and all that type of stuff. So at the end of the game, I go downstairs, and as I'm sitting downstairs, I remember, oh my God, it was the end of the game. The game was all over. I said, I never gave the ballots out. So now I got to figure out, well, they never know how, you know, who's the most valuable player. So I took a look, and I said, well, Mercury Hayes made the catch. And I said, well, it's Mercury Hayes. I said, he's the most valuable player and all that stuff. I got back up to the press box, and a couple of media guys said to me, so, you know, Bruce, this is the first time that the most valuable player in one of these deals was really the most valuable player.
True.
Right. And I forgot all about it. What am I going to do? It's going to be Mercury Hayes. That's what I pulled.
That's what they did with the attendance, too.
No, that you have to do it this way.
Okay.
No, we really did have a plan on that. We did have a plan on that.
So, like,
we did. I know that.
Yeah. Well, I know you did.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ace, you're number one.
So it's a basketball media day last year.
Okay.
And I'd stand up to ask a question.
Oh, I know what this is.
And John Beilein asks if I am Ace because I'd introduced myself, and yes, I'm Ace. And he says, you have some very good tweets, Ace. And that was like the high water mark of my life thus far.
I wonder like what tweets he was specifically thinking of in that.
What makes me very happy is during that week, I think the tweet that he saw was I tweeted a gif of him dancing at like Michigan's Midnight Madness.
Oh, Beilein?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
and,
neat.
I think that's the one that he saw that, was that like prompted it, because it's the only time I'd mentioned him leading up to that week.
Well, I mean, one of his sons occasionally like would reply to me on Twitter, and they were like, they were very happy that we picked up on the subs thing. I remember, mm-hmm. like, because he was just like, "Yes, that is my father," like precisely. And I was like, I was very happy with that.
Yeah.
My number one is just Frank Anzalone.
we're going hockey.
Yes. So I am in my student days at Yost. And at this point in Yost's history, it is a nasty, dingy, angry, angry place. It's my favorite sporting place ever. And there's like kind of this competition amongst the various students to rattle people, whether it's players or parents or the opposing coaches or the refs. And I never really like participated that much in this one. just because it was I wasn't very good at it. I tried. Didn't really work out for me. But one time, it's between periods, and Anzalone's on the bench, and he's back at Michigan at Lake State, where he's the coach. And he's just this kind of fiery dude. And I don't remember what I said to him, but I had been on him for like a period. And he just turns to me, and he just says, "Shut the fuck up."
Yeah,
I was like, yes! And then he got fired like a couple years later. I was like, oh, it's too bad, because I liked him.
It was an endearing
show. Right. Hey, man. He heard me. He heard my soul. And he decided that he didn't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah, clearly. You know, can I do an honorable mention?
Sure. I mean,
so, you know, if we go to hockey, my honorable mention is Minnesota's playing Michigan in hockey years ago. Minnesota's in the WCHA at that time. And I'm going to go out and have a few beers with the guys after, you know, the Michigan people. Well, Minnesota just waxed us. I mean, it must have been 10-4. We just got beat badly. And Neil Koepke, who was, you know, writing for the Ann Arbor News, the hockey writer at that time, looks at me and he says, "You're going to go out with the Michigan guys?" I go, "Oh, not after a 10-4 game. I mean, there's no way in heck." I go, "Where are you going to go?" He goes, "Oh, we're going to go over and we're going to talk to the Minnesota coach." It happened to be Herb Brooks. We spent the entire night. Herb Brooks and I sat down for about two and a half hours. I think we closed the bar. It was Chudich's place, Matty Chudich's place. We had a great time. So it was a lot of fun just talking to Herb Brooks.
And that's not stupid, though.
No, that wasn't stupid, but it was a great honorable mention. And yeah, he said Frank Anzalone and Herb Brooks trumps Frank Anzalone.
Well, so you just had every level you had to be like
a little better.
You're fired, Bruce. You're fired off our podcast.
He's conquered the gimmicky top five. He's got nothing left to do.
He's like Shem Beckler. He fires me.
Yeah, he always brought you back, though.
Okay.
It was lovely to have you.
Always fun.
Always great to have you.
Thanks, good to see you, Randy. All right, Seth, guys. All right. Take care.
Yeah, well, okay. Keep on keeping on, man.
All right.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, and MLS number
116-1358. If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Everyone has their own definition of true wealth, and it's our job to help them understand what the definition is for them. We look at everything from college to retirement and lifestyle planning, as far as estate planning and building their own legacy, helping them understand what their goals are, and then backing in from there.
Peak Wealth Management founder Nick Hopwood has been a part of the MGoBlog community from almost the very beginning. If you've put in the work to reach that point in your career, it's probably time to talk to him about your financial future. Stop by his office in Plymouth or visit peakwm.com/MGoBlog.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Eufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
When the sounds come together so close to my face, it's no wonder we wonder what's taking place. Oh, I feel like an animal in the night. Play it right, play it right.
We'd like to welcome in Bill Wenzel of the Alumni Association. How are you doing, Bill?
Good, Brian. How are you?
So this event is an annual event. It's a golf outing and a fundraiser for?
It's for our club, U of M Club of Greater Detroit. Most of the money that we raise at any of our events is for scholarships,
right,
for people who want to attend the greatest university in the world. So we're thrilled we have another great turnout in raising money for a good cause.
And you guys have a silent auction going on for?
We have a silent auction. We have a raffle for a number of different items. Yeah. The silent auction is for 4-ticket package to home games on the 45-yard line for all home games with the exception of Michigan State and Ohio State.
I see. And this is an annual thing that anyone can get in. Do you have to be a member of the club?
You do not have to be a member. We have people who are not members. We have guests. There is no fee to become a member. The only thing is that you're required to be a member is be a member of the Alumni Association as a
right,
whole.
Yeah.
But all are welcome to come to any of our events.
And your next event is?
Well, we have our next big event is coming up August 28th. It's our annual kickoff dinner, which
right,
we do generally the Monday before the first football game to get people kind of pumped up and excited about the upcoming season. And I think a lot of people are going to be optimistic about 2017, so we hope for a good turnout. It's at Laurel Manor in Livonia,
right,
so people from all over Metro Detroit, it's kind of centrally located.
And has Harbaugh been stopping by those? Or
We have not been that fortunate yet. We're always hopeful that that he will
he's
be
He's a little
coming.
Busy at that
yeah,
juncture.
He's, well, you know, we wish him well and keep bringing us wins.
Was there anything else that you wanted to cover?
Well, we have events pretty much every month, networking events. Sometimes
yeah,
they're social, sometimes they're professional, sometimes they're educational. We have the biggest event is the football bust, which comes up generally the Monday or Tuesday after the Big Ten championship game. It's the
yeah,
annual banquet for the football team. The whole team will be there, including Coach Harbaugh. All the seniors get their M rings, and again, it's a big fundraiser for our scholarship fund.
And I go to these events in New York and Chicago, and they're great networking events, especially for young alumni looking for connections in the business world. I imagine that this has got to be the largest and most active club in that regard.
Absolutely. We have about 2,000 members that are active, more than 17,000 that live in the area of alums. So there's always people out there to make connections with. I think one of the more exciting programs that we have that I want to make sure your listeners learn about is our transportation committee,
okay,
which organizes trips to the away football games.
Oh, that's good.
And it's sometimes it's hard to get tickets to those, but through our club, through our relationship with the university, we have a block of tickets and we run road trips. And again, another fundraiser. That committee goes back to the 1940s and Fritz Kreisler, wanting to get more support for road games and also to raise money for scholarships for student athletes. So that tradition continues.
How much annually would you say that you guys raise for Michigan scholarships?
Wow. I know we fund about 18 scholarships a year. Probably have to refer you to our website, umclubgreaterdetroit.org, for more specifics on the actual dollar amount, but it's significant to be able to fund 18 scholarships.
Well, great. The Alumni Association is a big sponsor of us, and every event I go to is high class, and you guys do a great job. So
well, thank
this is
you,
just and another one.
Thank you, and you guys do a great job, and real good fan of yours.
Well, thank you. It's
thank you.
Nice talking to you.
Thank you.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I feel so fly today. Emerged from my very narrow heel-toe hideaway. My bad, like what people that steal old lie to say. I told the emperor to get real clothes right away. I'm focused enough to knit a whole sleeper quilt. Train tunnels moving through people like a Peterbilt. I found what all of my confident voices are. I'm feeling free, 20 pounds on my Oyster card. Gone ahead with my Dwayne Wayne looking ass. I want a stupid mic.
Basketball and hockey have had a couple of, I guess interesting is not the right way to put it. One of them was depressing, one of them was encouraging, and the other one was obvious.
Yes.
So we'll start with basketball. DJ Wilson, of course, goes to the NBA draft and will probably go in the first round, might be a very early second round pick. Probably the right decision from his perspective, but not from mine.
Yeah, once you get into that range, it's a good decision to go, especially for a guy who's
why won't he think about
upside,
me?
But yeah, you know.
Selfishly,
big yeah. bummer.
Very big bummer because, you know, he was just kind of coming into a really dominant phase. And it's always disappointing when you lose a guy, like, right before he's just a murderer.
Yeah. Like, he just kind of was starting to scratch that. And, you know, you'd see it in kind of flashes where he'd have his games.
Like, it was almost the same thing with Trey Burke. Like, Trey Burke almost leaves after a very good freshman year. Mm-hmm. And I would have been just really disappointed if that hadn't happened. And then he's just an assassin as a sophomore. And at that point, you can go.
Like,
you've done right by me, and DJ did not do right by me.
No,
it's just kind of it's a bummer, and it's mostly a bummer on defense.
Yes, I'm almost never concerned about Michigan being able to score with John Beilein, but they have some guys who should be able to do that. But mostly because of what they have behind him. You know, this is going to get a lot of Duncan Robinson on the court, and we've seen Duncan Robinson play defense over the last couple of years.
He's okay against Northwestern.
He's gotten marginally better.
Not as good against Oregon.
Yeah. About half their game plan was just to get him ISO'd and then attack him, and it worked pretty darn well. There's going to have to be some adjustments made on the defensive end, especially since Wilson was Michigan's best rim protector, which is a relative term in this case.
Yeah.
But Mo Wagner's not that. And we saw in the testing portion of the NBA Combine why he's not that.
Yeah, he's never likely to be that.
He's not an explosive athlete, and he doesn't have a huge wingspan.
We had a big post about this, about how, you know, if you forced me to pick one, I was going to take Wagner.
Yeah, and I think I was on the same side and agree just based on the consistent offensive outputs that Wagner put together, and the fact that, you know, Michigan does have a couple of offensive X factors in Charles Matthews and Jerron Simmons, but mm-hmm. we don't know how that's going to pan out yet. So with Wagner back, you at least have a guy who you know can be your number one scorer.
Yeah, and the way he goes about doing that is kind of a Golden State Warriors kind of approach, right?
Yeah, you get to keep the five-out offense, which I very much like how that operates.
It's good.
Especially when you have a guy who can slash to the bucket like Simmons and Marr, and you're able to run those 1-5 pick and rolls or pick and pops, or, you know, there's just so many things that they can do just off of that one basic action when you have a guy like Wagner.
And that's a great segue into Jaron Simmons.
Yes. And one thing Jaron Simmons can do quite well is, even though his overall shooting numbers aren't great, he's actually pretty good.
Well, usage is just a huge factor.
Yeah, his usage was absurd at Ohio.
And what's more than that, he created all of his shots.
Yes.
So something like 3% of his two-pointers were assisted, something like 35% of his three-pointers were assisted. Those are the most absurdly low numbers I've ever seen in like 4 or 5 years of looking up Michigan and their opponents on Hoop Math.
Yeah.
He got no help whatsoever.
Yeah, so he actually graded out pretty darn well as an isolation player. And also pretty critically to Michigan, grades out well as a pick-and-roll ball handler.
Yes.
And one thing I noticed while going through his synergy page is that a very high percentage of his assists resulted in three-pointers. So based on both what I've seen of him on film and what the stats say, he's got pretty darn good vision off that high screen. He's not just going to score every time. And so he did not have that much help last year, but the help that he did get was mostly in the form of drive and kick, and that will translate quite well.
Yeah, and his ability to shoot off a screen is something that he's very, very good at. And when you've got like that inside-out threat in Wagner and a guy who can finish with both hands, is tall enough to make all of those shots around the rim to be really, really high efficiency, a guy who you have to pop out on in case he rises up, that's going to be a layup line for Wagner for chunks of the season.
Absolutely. If you have to put any attention to that ball handler, and that's death against Wagner, or you're just going to get your team rotating where somebody else is going to hit a three. But just to follow up on the jump shots off the dribble, Simmons graded out in the 87th percentile in that last year.
Yeah, pick and roll jump shots where he accepts the pick, right?
And this is all jump shots.
All jump shots off the dribble.
So that also includes isolation situations.
So he's like an 87th percentile jacker.
Yes, and he was at 35% on threes on those situations, which is pretty darn good in those. So, and especially considering the defenses against Ohio were focused almost entirely on stopping Simmons. It's pretty impressive that he could rise up and get buckets like that. So, especially when you're having to replace the amount of late clock production that Michigan has too, because that's one thing that Wagner really did not do.
No.
And the end of shot clock situations almost exclusively went to Walton and Irvin.
And now, Simmons is
those positions are out there.
Yeah, he's going to take all of them probably. Yeah,
him and Charles Matthews.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, would you trade Simmons for DJ? That's a tough question. Because Michigan really had a hole in point guard production.
It really depends on your belief in Xavier Simpson. But, you linked to this, and there were a couple other articles I read about just how much the pull-up jumper is changing. This is happening more in the NBA now, but we saw it with Derek Walton. Being able to just rise up and hit a three-pointer off the dribble consistently totally changes the way defenses have to approach the pick and roll, how they have to approach defense in general. And
Michigan got to like a top five offense in college basketball last year without a super efficient like all-star who's going to go to the NBA draft.
Yeah, they didn't have a Caris LeVert guy who could get to the rim at will or anything like that. So,
but they did that largely because Derek Walton was the second best player in the country rising up off the dribble.
Yes,
and Simmons last year was ninth.
Yeah, so to circle back around to that, I don't know whether I'd trade Simmons for DJ Wilson, because if the alternative is Xavier Simpson, we've seen Simpson's jumper. It's wonky as hell. Even if he gets that to a place where it plays in Michigan's offense, it's going to be more as a spot-up guy.
Right, like his three-pointer is always going to be the Glenn Robinson three.
Yeah, it's the defense decided to rotate and ignore you, and you have the ball now, and you have to. I do think DJ Wilson's the better player. I would like to have him back, but
it's an interesting question though. Like, how much worse is Michigan's defense without DJ, and how much worse is Michigan's offense without Simmons?
Yeah,
I can't answer that question, but
especially since Charles Matthews is is so important to this team next
who
year,
knows
and we have no clue. We don't. He could be an all Big Ten player. He could be a complete bust. And he is of paramount importance both to the offense functioning as well as it did last year, and especially if Robinson can't hold up at the four on defense, he's going to have to slide over a position and do that to Glenn Robinson. And he's not as big as Robinson. So if you're working with like a Novak-sized guy.
A little bit more athletic than Novak.
Yes, to say the least. But it's still it's tough trying to project this team. It's really tough trying to project this team.
I mean, it's not tough projecting them in the tournament. It's just tough projecting them like
where they'll finish and whether they'll be as good as this year's team.
Well,
to be
honestly, you have to consider that Michigan post Maverick was a top 10 team in the country.
Yeah.
And that's
is this team going to reach that level? It takes a lot of projection to get there.
I don't know. You never count out touchdown Tom.
You know, I said in the last year's season preview that, you know, Derek Walton and Zach Ervin are what they are, and that's the baseline for this year. And that was that was
half right.
It was exceptionally wrong.
Well, half right.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, I believe in John Beilein quite a bit.
Moving on to the obvious, hockey hires Mel Pearson to replace Red Berenson. One, I think that this might have been a little bit more of a finesse job for Ward Manuel.
Yes.
Than otherwise would have expected. There were a lot of rumors that this wasn't going to be a slam dunk.
Like leading up to the day of the press conference.
Yeah, but it did occur, and Michigan made the, I guess, most obvious and, like, floor hire. Yeah. But if the floor hire is Mel Pearson, that's
floor.
Okay. And we've talked about this on the blog a little bit, but College Hockey News has had Corsi stats for the past 3 years, and Tech has been top five all 3 years. Dave actually split out a lot of those games against power opposition, and he's still winning most of those against Michigan and Michigan State and other major teams.
Better teams.
And Michigan State and Michigan haven't been very good, but it's kind of a he'll take yours and beat you, and you'll take his and beat you too.
Yeah.
So, and then I think the way the assistants worked out was for the best. So Wiseman stays, and I'd heard a lot about how in the last few years of the program, Wiseman was kind of the glue that was keeping things together. I have to assume that he was the guy behind the umbrella power play that Michigan had never run until the insanely good year 2 years ago. And I've heard that he's been instrumental in keeping Michigan's recruiting maybe not up to where it wants to be, but at least kind of treading water with
it. Which, given the situation with Red kind of playing out the string, that's no easy feat.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan has a first-round pick, probably maybe an early second-rounder, and Josh Norris coming in. And they have another guy in Mike Pastajov who was regarded as that prospect when he committed. And he's had injury problems and isn't going to be a top two-round pick right now, but that's not Wiseman's fault or whoever actually got him in. So just to have that, given the last few years, is impressive and necessary for Michigan to rebound. And then Bill McCault comes in. Bill McCault.
I remember that guy.
Was the first guy Mel hired when he went to Tech. And immediately Tech gets a lot better. And McCault has a reputation as a superior recruiter and a guy who found some hidden gems, according to Tech fans. A guy who obviously knows Michigan backward and forward, has a lot of coaching experience. He went to the USHL and was the GM and head coach of a team in the USHL. And they won the championship the first year, and this year they were really bad. But it's so difficult to tell who's responsible for what in the USHL just because rosters change so much and there's so many different variables in there. There's not really any kind of consistent up and down in the USHL. So this is a staff that has transitioned from being very old to sort of old, and you've got a couple of guys who are Michigan guys who have been around the block. And, it's impossible to tell, like, how good an assistant coach is, but there are at least some indicators that they have some positive indicators. They should be able to recruit. And the thing that happened in the first year where Mel was at Tech is they went from being like a 5-win team to a 15-win team. And I think a similar turnaround is possible here, because Michigan's going to have a couple of more talented guys than they had a year ago, and they've been kind of steadily on the downside, especially defensively, and I think Mel's going to pick that back up. So, you know, it wasn't the best possible hire, because there are just a couple of Urban Meyer types kind of out there in college hockey right now.
Yeah.
But I can't really criticize Michigan for making this move. Just making the move in itself, I think, is the biggest win. And then I have a lot of expectation that Mel is going to make Michigan competitive immediately and very good in the near future. So I'm on board.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have hockey to pay attention to again.
This has been Aces Hockey Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook, and thanks, Bruce Made, and never come back.
Better than us?
Nobody!
Where's the men's room?
We don't know.
We don't.
I'm not trolling you. It's probably that way. That guy's not going to be hailed the victors. Would you find out where the restroom is?